Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Coming up after the break, we've got a really interesting segment on how you and I are being watched by our computers. No, don't worry about that light turning on and watching you. I don't know that that's happening yet. I do know, however, that Google and a bunch of other programs, it's not just Google, although I plan to pick on Google substantially today. Google is watching you. They are watching where you're going, what you're doing. Terrific guest, Susan Harley, the Deputy Director for Public Citizens Congress Watch, is going to give us all the ugly details of the way that Google is watching us. And we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. I still, though, can't get over Wednesday's shooting. Just the day before yesterday evening, most everyone knows, in Charleston, South Carolina, in one of the nation's first black churches. Indeed, it may be the South's first black church, a church with a lot of history, a church that was firebombed to the ground, and a church that definitely played its part in standing up for the civil rights era. In the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, a young man walked in with his gun, a semi-automatic rifle. Really, it's a semi-automatic machine gun. I mean, there's no other name to call it. The only difference between it and a fully automatic machine gun is that in one, you hold the button down, and the other one, you can shoot people as fast as you can move your finger back and forth, which most all of us can do many, many times in a second. And he unloaded his gun. In fact, he reloaded four times and shot dead nine people, including the pastor of this historic church. Prior to shooting everyone, he said some actively racist things about black people, said that he had to prevent them from taking over, and basically tried to start a race war. This is a young man from a small town in South Carolina who apparently had a long history of saying racist things, making racist jokes, talking about, talking about doing things like a race war. In fact, he said on before he went in the church, he told his friends Wednesday he was going to kill a bunch of people. They apparently thought he was joking. What's interesting about this story, I think, is not that racism still is alive and well, and virulent racism alive and well. That's, I think, something that all of us should know. It is particularly disgusting that it happened in a church. Something about murdering people in a place of worship that really makes your stomach turn. That's a place where people seek solace, seek safety. In the slavery years, and particularly in Jim Crow era, the black church was the only place where blacks felt safe because it was the one place they could congregate. Generally, they were not allowed to congregate in violation of the First Amendment because white people, white Southerners, feared that blacks would get together and demand equal rights under the law. But they could meet in churches, and therefore our civil rights era began with Martin Luther King and others of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, preachers, really, black preachers, who stood up to fight for civil rights. Of course, even in the 60s, the black church was not a completely safe place. Many a church, including this one, was firebombed. Many people were shot. And the killer, well, the killer got his gun, we now know, under the gun show loophole. The same thing that I and others have been complaining about for years, and they conservatives say, it's not going to matter. Well, 9 people's innocent blood are on your hands, those of you who refuse to close the gun show loophole. What is the gun show loophole? Well, if you're a licensed gun dealer and you want to sell a gun, the people you sell to have to undergo a background check. It's actually pretty simple to do. 95% of the time, it just takes a phone call. And you go in and you find the person doesn't have any felonies or pending violent felonies. And it hasn't been declared by a court to be dangerously mentally ill. Dangerously in the sense of criminally insane. Not just danger to yourself, but danger to others. And 95% of the time, people walk out. They take their weapon. They're on their way. Some of the other 5% of the time, it takes up to 3 days to find the records for certain people, and certain people are turned down. Indeed, tens of thousands are turned down every year. People who would otherwise buy a gun. But if you want to go to a gun show, or you want to go to a relative, or you want to get your bullets off the internet, no background check required. No, we trust you. And thus, most felons, murderers, gang members, and terrorists, if they want their guns, they just go and get them without going through a licensed gun dealer. Now, here's the thing I don't get. You would think the licensed gun dealers would want to close the gun show loophole. After all, they are harmed by it. They lose business by it. They don't get to sell to the insane murderer terrorists. And other people do. It's not fair. Sure, they don't care about the lives lost, but they might care about the loss of business. This should be an easy thing to fix. But the National Rifle Association, for reasons they have never, ever explained, wants insane murderer terrorists to be able to kill as many people as possible. Otherwise, why would they support selling guns to people with pending felony records? This guy had one. It was a pending felony. He had asked some very strange questions in a mall about when people are going or not going. The police were called because the people were nervous. And they found him with an illegal substance on him, something called Suboxone, which I admit I know nothing about, though I'm told by CNN it's used to treat opiate addiction. Whatever it is, it was an illegal substance. It was a pending felony drug charges. And he could not buy a gun from a licensed gun dealer. So that's okay. He just went around. And legally bought a weapon. It was said in some of the early broadcasts that it was a birthday present from his father. I reported that yesterday, and now it appears that it was just birthday money, and the family didn't know what the killer did with the money. I guess we'll find out more of the truth later. What we do know about the killer is that his Facebook post showed him, and this is his profile picture, this is an obscure picture, showed him wearing a jacket with 2 flags, one from apartheid-era South Africa and the other from apartheid-era Rhodesia, both countries that used to have white minorities control and persecute the black majority. He's not exactly wearing a happy face while he's wearing these racist flags, and his frown is also augmented by the Confederate flag he has on the back of his car. And the fact that he said he was going to kill a bunch of people, and the fact that he said he wanted to kill black people. So this is an unrepentant racist. And for all the complaints that right-wingers have about hate crimes laws, this was a hate crime. Indeed, it was terrorism. It was domestic terrorism. Imagine, just for a second, imagine that a Muslim man said Christians ought to die and started shooting in a church. What do you think the country would do then? Do you think maybe then we would remove people on the terrorist watch list from those who are eligible to buy semi-automatic machine guns? Is this guy any different? Isn't everyone who wants to kill people based on their race or religion or ethnicity, aren't they all terrorists? This guy wanted to start a race war. That's what he wanted to start. That's what he said he wanted to start. And he got 9 dead through the gun show loophole. This is something that no self-respecting gun owner should support, the gun show loophole. I have never heard a self-respecting gun owner tell me that he or she believes that insane people or people with felons or felony charges should own guns. Never heard it. In fact, 74% of NRA members want to close it, and some 89% of all Americans. But it continues, all because of the NRA. Their leadership, I should say, not their members. We're going to move on. I got to move on. I've got Susan Harley coming to talk about Google watching us. It's a whole different reason to be outraged. I do want you to hear that story, and I'll make a comment at the end about the murder in Charleston. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this. The guy singing this song. This is Mark Levine. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Who is watching you? Is it the Peeping Tom? Is it the government? Well, the government may be watching you to some extent, but not so much as Google. Google knows a lot about you. Google has your emails if you're part of Gmail. Google has everything you've searched in that search engine. Both very kind things, like that present for your mothers on Mother's Day, and maybe some things that you wish Google didn't know about. Your porn preferences, sorry, Google's got it there. What does Google know about you? What do they do with that information? And what are they doing in Congress to get their way? To answer these questions, I've invited Susan Harley, the Deputy Director for Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. Susan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
So first of all, what does Google know about you and me and hundreds of millions of other Americans and billions of people around the world?
Well, we're not entirely sure everything that they know. We spoke to many different privacy experts, people who have been looking into this, but Google knows how much Google knows. And so that's the biggest problem that we wanted to point out through this report.
That's really scary. Does Google know more about us than, say, the National Security Agency, the NSA, the government watchdog group?
Well, that's very likely. Again, no confirmation of that, but it would appear so. In whatever information Google has, they can be required to turn that information over to the NSA. So, in essence, NSA could have all of that information. So, equivalent, if you look at it that way.
Okay, we don't know the full extent of what Google knows, but which is scary. But let's talk about what we know Google knows. Google knows everything we type into their search engine, right? Do they store that?
They apparently do store that, and then they go across platforms to integrate the data, and that's where they are having their they're really looking to expand in that area. And so, many people use Google Drive, some of those applications for organizing information, and then they're buying new technology like Nest, which is a home heating thermometer system, as well as Dropcam, and those technologies were meant to improve energy efficiency, but can use that information across platforms to determine when people are home or when they're not home. And now they're expanding into the sky, into space, with their purchase of Skybox, which has satellite imaging software, Google Glass, where people could be taping you or zooming in on you without us knowing, and then they could be using that in a facial recognition ways.
So here's the thing. They know where we are. They know when we've been sleeping. They know when we're awake, only unlike Santa Claus. They may not use that for our good, for goodness sake. So that they watch us. They know where we're going when we're driving. But to me, that scares me less, because that's the external, than the internal. They know my thoughts. If I want to look something up, they know. If I'm looking up something on anything, they actually can read my mind because I'm telling Google what I'm thinking. That to me scares me even more than knowing where I am.
Well, and they're making good money off of that, definitely. The fact of going through your emails to determine what your interests are, so they can show you those types of ads.
Do they go through your emails?
Absolutely, their business model.
Not just your search engine. I mean, when I think of an email, I think of like a letter. You know, you put it in the mailbox, and only the person on the other side reads it, and it's a federal crime to open up someone's mail. If I send an email to my love and say what things I'm thinking about the one I love. Google can read that and use that?
If you're using Gmail, absolutely. And they, there's been instances where people have accused them, journalists have accused them of going through their email when they are writing stories, about issues that Google is on a different side. If you look at their privacy policy, they basically say, we can collect whatever type of information because we want to use it to improve your user experience. And so that's, giving you those targeted ads.
But so they give me ads based on what I write about, all right, is that all they do with the information?
Well, again, it's not entirely known what they use the information for, but, that's what they say, is that it's, for more targeted ads.
Who watches Google? Google's watching us. Who's watching Google? What government agency would regulate what Google collects about us?
Well, the Federal Trade Commission, in some instances, has had some oversight of the way that they are interacting themselves in a business sense, and so they have entered into settlements with the company in a couple of instances where they were at least accused of violating the public trust, and then they settled those charges. So, that's one instance where there's some oversight, but...
And I think Europe has actually been tougher on Google than the United States. Is that right?
In some instances, and Europe has stronger policies as far as things like the right to be forgotten and, some more forward-looking privacy ideas. But, the United States doesn't have a really great oversight system in place. And then, one of the things we also highlighted in the paper is that some watchdog organizations are receiving corporate funding from the company. And so, again, just the appearance of currying favor.
Yeah, kind of hard to watch the person that's paying your salary. I mean,
it can be assumed.
So I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about specifically all the things that Google is doing and spending on people, on others that are, like members of Congress, and also what could be done in a more beneficial world to make sure that people like Google, companies like Google, aren't watching us all the time. And then I also want to talk about the fact that is Google alone, or are other online companies doing pretty much the same thing? Folks, if you want to call in and join the conversation, it's easy to do. Just pick up the phone and dial 888-653-7543. 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. My guest is Susan Harley, the Deputy Director for Public Citizens Congress Watch. And if you feel like somebody's watching you, you don't have to turn around. It's right there. It's coming out the computer. They're inside the building. Halloween's over, but it's all pretty scary to me. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back right after this. You ever read the book 1984? You know how scary it must feel. A big brother watching you everywhere you go. Watching you from the TV set, written in 1948, that must have seemed like a fantasy to George Orwell, everybody watching him, but they are watching you. And even scarier than watching you, at least in 1984, in that book, which everyone should read if you haven't read it already, Winston, they watched where he went, they listened to who he spoke to, but they could not penetrate his thoughts. They could not read his mind. The one thing that was safe and free from the government watchdogs of that totalitarian big brother in 1984 was your mind. But Google knows. Google knows. You want to search for something serious or frivolous? Google knows. What do they do with that information? We don't know. That's the scary thing. My guest is Susan Harley, Deputy Director for Public Citizens Congress Watch. If you want to call in and join the conversation, just pick up the phone and dial 888-653-7543. So, Susan, give me some idea of all that Google can collect on ordinary internet-using American citizens.
Well, they can look at your email. They can look at your searches. They can look at where you're going using Google Maps. They can, if you have a Nest thermostat, know whether or not you're in your home. If you're spotted on someone's Google Glass and someone's using facial recognition software, I think that's, you know, where it's going in the future. Pretty much everything. I don't think they've quite been able to tap into your actual mind, but we talked about.
Well, if you do a search engine, they kind of know what you're thinking. I mean, who puts something in a search engine and isn't thinking those things, whatever they are?
It's true. I think some of the things that are really scary are moving forward, they may have a Google Glass in a contact lens form with chemical sensors. And so I think they are getting very close.
So now what is – Google must have a privacy policy. I see all these privacy policies all over the Internet. What's their privacy policy?
Their privacy policy basically says, if you use our products, we're going to collect your information. And so they're, pretty open about that.
So they have a no privacy policy.
That's a great way of putting it.
They basically say, if you use our services, we are watching you. You know, I remember when I used to use YouTube. I still use YouTube. But I used it before it was bought out by Google. And I had an account there. I had all my videos from all my TV appearances and so forth. I got hundreds on there. By the way, folks, you want to check that out? Mark Levine Talk, quick plug, MarkLevineTalk. But I have it there dating back several years. And then Google brusquely informed me that I had to join Google Plus in order to keep all my YouTube videos up there. And I'm like, well, I signed up to put them on YouTube. I didn't sign up to have Google know everything about me. But they basically said, nope, you can't add any more videos. You can't use your videos. In order to keep my online presence, I had to join Google Plus, something that I never use and I worry about. And, is this overwrought concern of mine? I mean, maybe Google doesn't care about all my political views and what I'm doing, and maybe I'm just more like that guy in that song, a little paranoid. Could I be a little too worried?
Well, I don't think so, but at the same time, I use Google. We mentioned in the report, which is entitled Mission Creepy, Google is quietly becoming one of the nation's most powerful political forces while expanding its information collection empire.
Clever title.
You get
points for Mission Creepy. You really do. Congratulations.
I didn't come up with that, so I can't take the credit, but it's
right.
Clever. We even mentioned that many of the facts in the report were drawn from Google searches. And so it's just, how comfortable are you with having people know your information?
I'm not comfortable at all. I'm not really hiding that much. I mean, I just admitted on the air that I like to speed. And that's pretty much the only crime that I regularly commit. Actually, the only crime I know I've committed is traffic laws. But still, crime or not, I don't really like it knowing my intimate thoughts. I think they should remain intimate to me. Now, Google can't be unique in this regard. I'm sure that we can't only blame Google. Don't other online companies track us, and Yahoo or Bing or anybody else?
I'm actually not familiar with the privacy policies of all of its
competitors.
Competitors. And so I can't say, but I do, know when I use Yahoo, they have tracked my ads as well. So there must be some cookie placement. I think where there's some real concern is where people have not agreed to opt out, or they're not opting in to having their information used. And so some instances where that violation of public trust happened are letting students use apps for education, which took a whole bunch of their personal information without any consent. When they had their globetrotting cars out doing their street view surveillance, It was they were sucking up Wi-Fi and taking people's private information, saying it was kind of out there on the airwaves. And so, you know, we could take that information, including social security numbers, passwords, etc. So, you know, huge problems if people are not knowingly giving them their information.
Susan, you mentioned opting out. Can we opt out? Can I tell Google, thank you, Google, I like your search engine, I like to watch YouTube, I don't want you knowing anything about me. Is there some magic button I can push and tell Google, stop watching me?
We have a footnote in the report that details, you know, at least ways to limit the amounts of information that they're able to collect on you. I think, you know, whether or not you, say, click on an ad and their purchase of DoubleClick software, I mean, I'm not certain whether or not that would still count because they don't necessarily consider that a Google product.
But is there a way, is there some formal way to at least limit Google as much as possible? Can I go into my Google account right now, and I haven't, and I should, and I will, Susan, if you tell me how, go in and say, I want to limit as much data as you will let me limit. Stop watching me.
Yeah, I have not tried. I know that there is a footnote. I should note that I edited, well, I was one of the editors on the report. I wasn't the primary author, but my understanding is there is a way to opt out, and we do have a footnote. I was just trying to page through and
tell you what,
find it.
Email me that footnote. You don't have to do it right now. I'll post it on my website, and then I and others can use it. When we're done, go to marklevinetalk.com. I'm going to post Susan's footnote, and we'll at least try to limit the amount of privacy, the amount of spying that Google can do on us. Two things that I regularly do is, you know, if I don't want to tell you, I mean, I'm a solid Democrat, I'm a progressive, but still, I don't really care for them to know every single thing I'm doing. It's a little creepy for me. They do have things like they have, what do they call it? Not anonymous, but private. Like you can go on Chrome and look at it in a private setting on the website. Incognito, I think they call it. You can do that. You can also erase your cookies from time to time. Do those two things help protect your privacy?
I think they're better than not doing it, but again, because Google's the only one who really knows, you know, how much information Google is gathering, I can't say it would, you know, completely protect you.
One other thing I want to deal with, and that's how much money Google is spending to influence Congress. You have in your report, and this was astonishing to me, and I want to make sure it's right, that Google is the number one corporate giver to lobbying groups in the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually their direct lobbying that they're reporting. Themselves.
More than Exxon? More than the Koch brothers? I mean, I've attacked the Koch brothers many times on this station, and we're not defending them, but Google pays more to politicians than they do?
To lobby, so that's different than their campaign spending,
okay,
which we also do know. But yes, absolutely. They're ahead of Dow, General Electric, Boeing.
What are they lobbying for? Or against?
Well, they lobby, you know, on tech issues, on open internet, on privacy issues. I don't think we pull out their actual issues that they report lobbying on, just the number, but it is extremely high. It's already over $13 million, and then
$13 million dollars, and that's just for the United States Congress.
Correct.
That doesn't even include state legislators or anything like that.
Correct.
Wow. $13 million. Now, you say open internet. If Google supports net neutrality, that kind of lobbying, I mean, I agree with them on. I think they do, right?
Well, the interesting thing about Google is they tend to give their money to both sides of the aisle. I don't have the information in front of me, you know, specifically on which issues they were lobbying, and let alone some of their positions on those issues. But, you know, when it comes to their campaign spending, or when they're spending, you know, what we term as soft power, giving money to nonprofits, they're doing it across a political spectrum. So that tends to show that, you know, it's less about ideology and far more about the potential to curry favor.
And what do they want? I mean, the tax breaks? I mean, what kinds of things? I mean, if you're going to spend $13 million and you're a corporation and you're publicly traded, that money has to you have to think, if you're the CEO of Google, that money is giving you something back. It's making you more money. Otherwise, you wouldn't spend it. What is Google buying when they curry favor?
Well, we, again, didn't list the specific issues. You could go to the Center for Responsive Politics where they spent, you know, they have it broken out by issue. Okay. But what we do spend some time in the report looking at is really fascinating. They're lobbying in the states, which is a little bit clearer to find that they're having some influence on legislation. So an example we give is that they went into Nevada. They had an aggressive lobbying campaign to allow self-driving cars. And so after that intensive lobbying, Nevada became the first state to officially approve self-driving cars. So they're similarly going in around use of Google Glass while driving. A lot of it has to do with
self-driving cars. They're letting people surf the internet while driving. That can't be safe.
It certainly cannot. And a lot of it, I think, is paving the way for driverless cars and that, you know, if someone's not technically driving, then they think, you know, they should be able to do other things.
Yeah, I don't know enough about driverless cars, about the technology one way or the other, but I would hope it's based on the technology and not based on what a big corporation wants. One more thing. Is there money openly spent, or is some of this dark money we hear so much about that was used in the 2014 midterm elections? Is some of this under the table?
A lot of their spending is under the table, and so we spend a good deal of the report speaking about their lack of political transparency. So there's a scale, it's a CPA-Zicklin scale, and so they're about average, but much lower than their tech peers, like Microsoft and IBM. Both are in the 90th percentile regarding the amount of information they give on their political spending. And they say in some instances, like who they're giving to, but not the size and nature of those donations.
Yeah, it matters whether it's $100 or $1 million. It really does, folks. So they're watching us, but we can't watch them. That's really nice. Let me go to the phones. 888-653-7543. We've got Dave in Arcata, California. Longtime listener. Probably been listening to me for 10 years now or so. Dave, welcome to the show.
Yeah, guys, I have no doubt that Google and Yahoo and Bing and MSN and Bigfoot, they all monitor us, but they are interested in what shapes we like, what colors we like, what is our sexual interests, and how well do we pay our bills and such, because they're marketing to industry that wants to decide whether or not we're worth advertising to. But that's not what scares me so bad. Ed Snowden targets it more of what people are really monitored, because they want to know how would you be likely to vote, what would you be likely to expose, blow the whistle on if you learned of a corruption, and then monitor that and interfere, in fact, and mess with your technology. I hope I'm making sense on this.
No, you are. And I guess that's a question I need to ask Susan, which is, all right, they know, as Dave says, what colors and shapes I like. They know who to market to. What do they know or do with any of my political thoughts or belief? Let's say I want to expose the president who is acting, in my view, outside the Constitution. Solid political speech, whether I'm right or wrong. Does Google watch that kind of stuff?
I have no idea. I imagine they would find it of interest, given their rising to be the top lobby spender and spending a ton in elections. But because their spending has been on both sides of the aisle, you know, it's hard to say really where they're coming from. You know, we do hear that they're, don't be evil. You know, that's their mantra. You know,
yeah,
they,
I don't think that's the kind of thing that is enforceable in a court of law. Your Honor, they were evil. I want damages. Google was evil. But speaking of evil, to what extent does Google share or not share whatever information they get with the National Security Agency, with the NSA, with the government? That's obviously what Dave's concerned about. How much sharing are they doing?
Well, if they receive a request, and there's been some findings that there's been a law broken, then they have to turn over the information requested to the agency.
And by the way, to be fair, If the government has a warrant, if they've gone before a neutral magistrate and gotten a warrant with probable cause, I have no problem with the government spying on me or anybody. We have to catch criminals, and I'm all fine. I like the Fourth Amendment as it is. My question is, outside of a warrant, how much are they giving the government?
Yeah, this is a loophole to the warrant requirement, and so it's allowing government organizations or agencies to kind of go to the company because, you know, it's not being applied to them that there is a need for a warrant. So it's a huge loophole.
Yeah, I think
definitely.
It is, too. I think it's part of where the Patriots come from. Dave, you got about 15 seconds to make a last comment.
Well, I'm concerned about the opposite of what Susan's pointing out. If indeed the government is the criminals invading countries for profit, if indeed the whole industry is about making bucks at the expense of the people, then exposing those who would expose is what troubles me. And
I got you. We got to protect those whistleblowers. I agree with you, Dave. Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you, Susan, for giving us this information. Again, it may have been more appropriate for Halloween, but I'm nervous enough. This is Mark Levine, back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Got just a few more minutes. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I am always nervous when I know that people are violating my privacy, whether it be Google or the federal government. Federal government, of course, just had its whole NSA program struck down as unconstitutional for spying on us. The scary thing is that the private industry, groups like Google, though not exclusively Google, computer programs like Google are spying us even more than the NSA. The private groups spy on us because they want to sell us things. The government spies on us ostensibly to prevent crimes. But as we learned from the killing in Charleston, domestic terrorists are all around us. And we are apparently not spying on them enough. So as much as I don't want the government spying on people who haven't committed crimes, I do want the government spying on hate groups, on terrorist groups. I don't mind if they infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. I don't mind if they go on Facebook and keep a watch on people who have slogans suggesting that they're out to kill. We know that the young killer here told his friends that, that he was going to kill people on Wednesday. And it seems like someone should have turned him in. The irony is that while Google and Facebook and others are carefully watching everything we do or say just so they can sell us something that we like, apparently no one is watching, or not enough people are watching, when we preach hate. Now, you have a First Amendment right to preach hate. I'll be very clear. You have the right to say whatever you want, no matter how hateful, pretty much. There are limits. You can't shout fire in a crowded theater. You can't make up a lie about someone that would be libel or slander. But in general, if you want to preach hate against blacks or anyone else, you can do so. But also, that can be monitored, and it should be monitored. Quick story, in Nashville, Tennessee, my hometown, many years back, a decade or two ago, the local Ku Klux Klan plotted to bomb our synagogue in Nashville, Tennessee. Luckily for us, a member of the FBI infiltrated the organization, pretended to be one of those racist white rednecks, and successfully derailed the plot. So I understand the need to monitor. I get it. But we should monitor when there is a threat, and then go before a court, get a search warrant, and then by all means, I want hate groups to be spied on. Google has much less of a reason to spy on us. They're not asking our permission. They're just trying to sell us things. These aren't done to prevent crimes or domestic terrorism. It's just done in the interest of commerce. So go ahead, federal government. Go ahead, state government. Spy on those that preach hate. Get a warrant to do so. And when a guy preaches violence, maybe we'll catch him next time. By the end of the day, if we simply would close the gun show loophole, if we simply would say that people who have committed felonies or who have a felony charge that is pending that they have to get a background check. Just like everyone that buys from a licensed gun dealer, then maybe, maybe, just maybe, the tragedy in South Carolina would not have happened. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. I'll talk to you next week.